them cool in the summer heat. Zoo officials say the occasion is to honor ancient Greek scientist Archimedes, who made a discovery while in the bath. Well, you might be pleased to know life is going back to normal as countries around the world are easing coronavirus restrictions. Disneyland in the French capital, Paris, is saying bonjour to visitors once again with all necessary precautions. Bet everyone missed that. The theme park reopened its doors to the public with limited tickets and an online reservation system. All visitors over 6 years old are required to wear face masks and to observe social distancing guidelines. New attractions, including a hotel and various car rides, are also available for guests. Disneyland Paris was shut for over 7 months due to rising COVID-19 infections. This is the first time since January 2020 that all the six Disney resorts are open. Technology has come in handy to rescue animals in disaster zones. American cinematographer Douglas Thron has used a high-tech infrared drone to save animals from fire or storm, or even those who are stuck in trees. The drone he uses has a large thermal camera, a spotlight, and zoom lens. The good point is that the aerial vehicle does not make too much noise, therefore it does not scare away animals.
So what I do is I fly infrared drones primarily at night over disaster areas after a hurricane or a fire hits, and I look for people's pets, whether it be cats or dogs, and I also look for injured wildlife, and then either I or rescue crews will go in and rescue the animals after I spot the animals after these natural disasters.
Thron has so far rescued hundreds of stranded animals in various places in the US and Australia. Emergency services have allowed him to participate in rescue efforts after making sure that the drone works well to achieve its goal.
Elders in an Indonesian town are rewarded with live chickens if they get vaccinated for COVID-19. Officials in a town of Sipanas launched the program after the vaccination campaign faced a low turnout from the public. Many have been reluctant to receive a jab over various reasons. Some say they were afraid they would die if they get vaccinated. Now it seems that the rewards they take have worked well and more people are willing to get a shot. Officials in the Indonesian town say they go door to door to give the elderly jabs and chickens to show their appreciation.
Children have their own ways of remembering the dead. In Gaza, Palestinian kids fly kites in memory of their peers who lost their lives in the recent Israeli onslaught. Dozens of kids participated in the event, holding kites bearing the pictures of 66 little victims. According to the organizers, the goal was to send a message to people around the world that Palestinian kids have the right to live a free and happy life. The children said their dream is to fly in the sky without any restrictions or wars. A herd of wild Asian elephants in China has turned into international stars after leaving their natural habitat in Yunnan province. The herd of 15 elephants is said to have left home in southwest China 15 months ago, but it was in April when they grabbed officials' attention after they were spotted by locals. The elephants have so far trekked nearly 500 kilometers across the country. They have traveled through villages and towns and even stopped for a rest. Local authorities have welcomed these mammoth travelers with treats of sweet corn and bananas. They are monitoring the elephants' movements with drones while keeping them away from residential areas. Chinese grandma has given a dazzling display of her masterly kung fu performance at a martial arts competition. The 98-year-old woman and her son took the stage as a curtain raiser to the event. The duo put on a kung fu show before a large crowd of spectators who were impressed by her skillful gestures. She was invited to the competition to act as a judge.
I started practicing martial arts when I was only 5. I would box every day, learning movements like chopping, pushing palm, and thrusting palm. Though I am old now, my strength hasn't gone.
Zhang says she has inherited her family's martial arts. She's rumored to have a sense of justice from a very young age and try to help others, which earned her quite a reputation where she lives. Traditional martial arts have been passed down in the Zhongqing village located in Zhejiang province for 500 years. Let's go to Italy, where Mount Etna has put on an eye-catching show with its spectacular eruptions. Red-hot lava fountains and plumes of smoke spewed up into the sky. The main eruption was located at the southeastern crater of the volcano. Mount Etna is Europe's tallest active volcano. It's located above the Sicilian town of Catania. It often erupts but rarely causes damage. However, nearby residents have to deal with ash showers. Geological studies show that Mount Etna has been active for more than 2 million years now. Egypt has opened its first archaeological replica factory in an attempt to promote its culture worldwide. The factory was inaugurated in response to people's demand for having detailed copies of ancient treasures. So far, over 6,400 high-quality replicas of ancient Egyptian artifacts have been produced. More than 150 artists work to make the goods out of stone, wood, and even gold.
The materials with which these are made are high quality. The highest and most elegant materials are being used to make these samples, and the materials are very close to those used to make the original artifacts.
The models have certificates showing that they are identical copies of the original artifacts. Each replica also has a barcode that provides extra information about the item. The factory is located in Kalyuba, about 35 kilometers northeast of the capital, Cairo. Now, a lot of people don't like rats and find them disgusting most of the time. However, the rodents are doing life-saving work in Cambodia. Now, the Southeast Asian nation has deployed a new squad of African giant pouched rats to sniff out old landmines. The new recruits have shown an exceptional ability at their task, with their handlers claiming 100% accuracy. There are now nearly 50 demining rats working in the field in Cambodia. The country started using the animal services in 2016, and they have helped detect and clear hundreds of landmines since. Last year, an especially heroic rat called Magawa attracted global fame after receiving a gold medal for his work. The hero rat, who is now retired, detected over 71 landmines.
A muralist from Greece is blending mythology with graffiti and street art to depict how COVID-19 has impacted lives around the globe. Ficus Antonios has painted the walls of many cities around the globe. He is now in the Cypriot capital, Nicosia, to continue his work. His latest artwork depicts Americus, a Cypriot mythical figure who was punished by the gods and turned into a plant. The Greek artist believes this theme is similar to the situation people around the globe have experienced since the pandemic began. He explains many people have grown roots because they're staying in one place for so long. two British artists have brought a combination of fun, art, and environmental concerns to the sidelines of the G7 summit. They have created a modern-day version of famous sculpture carved into America's Mount Rushmore. This time, it's called Mount Recyclemore. Joe Rush and Alex Rackage have made a sculpture of G7 leaders with electronic waste. They say their major goal is to raise awareness about the amount of unrecycled tech and gadgets, the damage they cause to the environment, and the ways to combat the issue internationally.
Well, what I'd like them to do, the leaders of the G7 conference, is I'd like them all to talk to each other and work out a plan that isn't just shifting the problem from one country to another, you know, but actually is a plan that we all work on together, which is how to deal with this waste and how to stop producing so much waste and how to recycle things. And all these issues have got to be dealt with globally. They can't be dealt with nationally because that's where the problem is. So we need them all to get together, like we've put them together here, and deal with the problem.
The United Nations says 53 million tons of electronic waste are generated annually all over the world. It estimates that the amount of the waste will double in less than 30 years. If that happens, electronic waste would become the fastest growing waste stream in the world. Advanced robots are increasingly helping humans in a variety of innovative ways. Now, they have found a place in the healthcare system and will help nurses and doctors stay safe during the COVID-19 pandemic.
I can do all kinds of things for elderly people. I can visit with people and brighten their day with social stimulation, entertain and help guide exercise, but also can do talk therapy, take bio readings and help healthcare providers assess their health and deliver treatments.
Grace, which is the newest humanoid robot to join the healthcare fleet. This intelligent machine can take temperatures and record other vital signs of patients. It has been designed in a way to also interact with the elderly and those isolated by the pandemic. Grace is a new prototype of celebrity humanoid robot, Sophia, created by a robotic team in Hong Kong.
So we designed Grace to look professional in a healthcare setting. So that would mean so that she would resemble the sort of human-like appearance of healthcare staff. And so then this would facilitate more natural interactions. A human-like appearance facilitates trust and facilitates a natural engagement because we're wired for human face-to-face interactions. That's just the way human beings are.
Hansen, while standing between Sophia and Grace, also said that both robots could speak different languages. He said Grace's creation was aimed at relieving the burden of frontline hospital staff dealing with COVID-19 patients. The company is planning a mass production of Grace and offers them to the market by August. The cost of making this robot is similar to a luxury car, but the cost is likely to decrease once the company begins manufacturing it in its thousands.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A tiny worm has wriggled back to life after lying frozen for 24,000 years in the permafrost land of northern Siberia. The organism was recovered from soil samples taken from 3.5 meters below the ground in Russia's Yakutia region. It's a multicellular organism that can withstand extreme cold. This ancient worm has broken the record for the longest living abeloid rotifer worm. Previous research suggests that it could survive for a decade when frozen. Earlier, scientists also discovered 30,000-year-old microscopic worms from northern Siberia. We'll be right back. Australian scientists have discovered one of the world's largest ever dinosaur species in the Eromanga area in outback Queensland. Research shows the plant-eating sauropod lived between 92 million and 96 million years ago when Australia was attached to Antarctica. Paleontologists estimated the dinosaur was as long as a basketball court and as tall as a two-story building. That makes it the largest dinosaur ever found in Australia and one of the top five largest ones in the world. Bones of the dinosaur were first uncovered more than a decade ago by cattle farmers.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, has warned lawmakers that QAnon conspiracy theory followers may be on the verge of carrying out more violence in real life on Democrats and others that they perceive, however falsely, to be threats. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Sharon Zhang, journalist. This article is published under the heading, QAnon followers are likely planning more violence against lawmakers, warns FBI. Here's more on the story. The Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, has warned lawmakers that QAnon conspiracy theory followers may be on the verge of carrying out more violence in real life on Democrats and others that they perceive, however falsely, to be threats. QAnon followers are evidently growing restless because they believe they can no longer trust the plan referenced in QAnon posts and that they have an obligation to change from serving as digital soldiers towards engaging in real-world violence, the FBI warns in a document to lawmakers. QAnon followers are conspiracy theorists who follow the word of an anonymous Q Online, widely speculated to be fringe right-wing forum, 8chan administrators Jim and Ron Watkins. The conspiracy theory riddled posts by Q have no basis in reality, but they have gained purchase among Donald Trump followers and others on the right. Q often posts what amounts to smear campaigns against Democratic politicians like Hillary Clinton.
Thank you.
But Q hasn't posted since December of 2020, and some Q followers are evidently anxious that Q's plan to take down the global cult of mostly liberal politicians and celebrities. The FBI warns in turn that Democrats and others who they perceive to be enemies of the cause could be in danger. The lack of direction and action from QAnon may lead the digital soldiers to harm perceived members of the cult, such as Democrats and other political opposition, instead of continually waiting Q's promised actions, which have not occurred. The FBI document reads, "The threat from militant QAnon followers is pronounced," the agency writes, following the group's large presence at the attack on the Capitol on January 6th. FBI agents have arrested over 20 self-proclaimed QAnon followers in connection with a Capitol attack, though previous reporting has found that a belief in QAnon was one of the most common shared traits among the Trump mob from that day. QAnon followers' participation in the Capitol breach underscores how the current environment likely will continue to act as a catalyst for some to begin accepting the legitimacy of violent action, the document says. A classified version of the FBI threat assessment was circulated among legislators in February, CNN reports. But lawmakers have been frustrated with the FBI for not investigating the conspiracy theory in more depth, noting that it's an increasingly large threat to domestic safety and democracy. Senator Martin Heinrich questioned FBI Director Christopher Wray in a hearing in April, asking why the agency cannot or won't tell the American people directly about the threat of QAnon in relation to the threat assessment. Wray responded that the agency is only investigating the conspiracy theory in relation to federal crimes, such as those committed on January 6th. But ignoring the growing threat of right-wing extremists has severely hampered the agency's abilities to prevent violence before, as is evidenced by the very Capitol attack that they are now investigating. Despite the fact that Heinrich had requested the FBI to look into the threat of QAnon in December, and the fact that at least one government agency had sent them a warning of the violence to come on January 6th, the FBI never prepared a formal report on the threat prior to the day. At the time, FBI officials said that they didn't want to impend upon free speech, but as NPR reported in January, that didn't stop them from issuing warnings over protests from Black Lives. And despite the fact that QAnon supporters and right-wing extremists have been on the rise for many years and pose a huge threat in the U.S., the FBI has spent an outsized amount of time investigating left-wing protesters and advocates, even though the right is responsible for nearly all modern domestic terrorism.
Thank you. Salmon Fishing in Yemen, a film produced in 2011 starring Ewan McGregor. Its whimsical story has little to do with what fishermen are going through in the war-torn country. Now close your eyes and imagine you are a fisherman. You have a boat and a sea full of fish in front of you and a family who depends on you. Imagine fish is the only means of sustenance. Then why should you stay at home looking at the empty plates? You cannot tolerate the emaciated bodies of your children any longer. You go to the sea. You get arrested. The enemy puts you in a secret prison while your family looks everywhere for you. This is the fate of many Yemeni fishermen arrested by the Saudi-led coalition. One day in May 2020, a group of Yemeni fishermen who were working with the Golden Star Company were arrested by the Saudi Coast Guard in the Red Sea near a Yemeni island. They were accused of being in a closed area, despite all the official permits they had obtained from the coalition. In the words of the captain of the boat, "When we were on the return trip, our boat had stopped near a Yemeni island, having run out of fuel in the wake of very high winds. After the distress call was made, a force from the Saudi Coast Guard came not to rescue, but to arrest us. They took us to the Farzan prison in Jizan on charges of reconnaissance." In fact, since the onset of the war in 2015, the Saudi-led coalition has been patrolling the length and breadth of the Yemeni coasts.
Yemeni fishermen have been targeted by the Saudi-U.S. coalition for arrest, detention, and torture in Saudi prisons since 2015. In many instances, their fishing boats are attacked by Saudi coalition vessels and aircraft and have been burnt, damaged, and even sunk. And a number of Yemeni fishermen have been injured, shot, burned, killed, and left to drown in the sea. As a result, many Yemeni fishers, actually most Yemeni fishers, have stopped going fishing because they find it too dangerous to be out on the sea with the Saudi coalition roaming and being very belligerent. So they remain in port, and as a consequence, they are unemployed and unable to feed their families. They're also unable to feed the Yemeni people. And so this becomes not only a crisis for the fisher people, but also for the Yemeni people in general.
In early May this year, Saudi Arabia released 11 Yemeni fishermen after detaining them for more than 40 days. Saudi forces had kidnapped 24 fishermen in mid-July while they were fishing in the territorial waters. By many accounts, these poor people are a few out of thousands of Yemenis arrested in Yemeni waters under various pretexts. But they're also among the luckiest. In August 2018, Human Rights Watch published a disturbing report on the circumstances of the Yemeni fishermen, but it fell on deaf ears.
According to a report by a Geneva-based group whose acronym is SAM, S-A-M, there are hundreds of Yemeni fishermen who have been illegally arrested, illegally detained in Saudi prisons, in a number of Saudi prisons. And they have not been represented by legal counsel. They are not allowed to contact their families. They are not given access to representatives of the Yemeni government. And furthermore, they're tortured. And the types of torture that they are forced to endure include beatings with clubs and cables, being suspended by ropes, being crucified, being electrocuted, being put into solitary confinement, and in many cases they are not given proper medical attention. Many die and have disappeared into these Saudi prisons, never to emerge again.
In their all-out war, the Saudis and their allies have brutally tried to deprive the Yemeni nation of everything, including basic foodstuff. Before the war, the fishing sector in Yemen was the country's second largest economic sector after oil, producing about 450,000 tons of seafood annually. It provided a livelihood for over 2.5 million Yemenis living along the Red Sea coast and the Gulf of Aden, according to Yemeni studies.
So by targeting the fishermen and the fishing industry, the Saudi coalition is targeting as well the entire Yemeni people, in that it's trying to destroy the resistance of the Yemeni people to the illegal Saudi, US, UK, Israeli war on them and the occupation of their country. It's like a siege, a medieval siege of the city. What the Saudi coalition is trying to do is starve the Yemeni people into submission through hunger and misery, and of course their indiscriminate attacks on civilians, in order that the Yemeni people will give up and surrender and endure a permanent Saudi occupation. So that's the purpose behind the attack on the fishermen.
Today, being a fisherman in Yemen is among the most dangerous jobs, and many times an impossible one, as many of the country's coastal waters and islands have been restricted areas for Yemeni fishermen since 2015. Fishing boats, ports, and processing sites have been systematically destroyed or damaged, and many fishermen have lost their lives. Suleiman, 45, is a fisherman from Hodeidah. He says, "I know many fishermen who have been killed at sea and in the fish market. They were without sin and had no connection to politics or the state." The current statistics depict clearly the gravity of the situation. Nearly one-third of agricultural production and fishing has disappeared since the start of the war. It's also inflicted up to $6.9 billion in damage to the fishery sector, including harbors, landing centers, and boats. At least 334 fishermen have been reported killed or injured since 2015.
The Yemeni fishermen report that they have been harassed and attacked while they have gotten too close, for the comfort of the Saudi coalition, to two islands in particular. One island is called Socotra, and the other one is called Mayun. One sits at the mouth of the Gulf of Aden, and the other one sits at the mouth of the Red Sea. And most of the shipping of the world passes daily past these two islands. And what the hidden agenda is here is that the Saudi coalition is acting in support of the U.S. government, U.S. empire, which is seeking to undermine and prevent the People's Republic of China from accomplishing its Belt and Road Initiative, its new Silk Road, which is a trade route that it's trying to establish to expand its trade across South Asia, into Africa, and into Europe.
At a time when 80% of Yemen's 30 million population is in need of humanitarian aid, working for Saudi forces sometimes becomes the only source of livelihood. The fishermen who refuse to join the enemy's camp are always subject to arrest, torture, and death for fishing in Yemen's territorial waters.
Yeah,
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Mike Pence, the former U.S. vice president, has been heckled as a traitor for his refusal to overturn last year's election result during a speech to a gathering of religious conservatives. Mike Pence, who is widely seen as laying the groundwork for a White House run in 2024, had entered an auditorium in Orlando, Florida, to a standing ovation on Friday, 18th of June. But a small group began shouting abuse, including traitor, as he began a 28-minute speech. The dissenters were quickly escorted out by police. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist David Smith. The piece is titled "Conservative Christians Jeer Traitor Pence for Refusing to Overturn Election." Mike Pence, the former U.S. vice president, has been heckled as a traitor for his refusal to overturn last year's election result during a speech to a gathering of religious conservatives in Florida. Mike Pence, who is widely seen as laying the groundwork for a White House run in 2024, had entered an auditorium in Orlando, Florida, to a standing ovation on Friday, 18th of June. But a small group began shouting abuse, including traitor, as he began a 28-minute speech. The dissenters were quickly escorted out by police. Earlier, in a corridor outside the ballroom, an attendee named Rick Hurley, wearing a red Make America Great Again cap, also vented his frustration over Mike Pence's role in certifying Donald Trump's defeat on 6th of January, amid false claims of voter fraud. "We need to start fighting. Rick Hurley shouted at anyone who would listen. We need to stop being so damn nice. What the hell's going on? Why is Pence coming today? Donald Trump has his pen in his back still. Before being taken aside by police, he also remarked, I'm ready to fight. I'm going to boo him off stage. I'll take the bullet. I'll walk to the front of the stage and look him in the eye and say, what are you doing here? In an interview, Rick Hurley said he had been at the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January. I want to know why Mike Pence is here today, he said. He stabbed Donald Trump in the back and took the coins like Judas. But Ralph Reed, organizer of the Faith and Freedom Coalition's annual Road to Majority conference, was at pains to give Mike Pence a warm welcome and honor him as stalwart of the Christian conservative movement. And the former vice president, who earlier this month admitted that he and his former boss, Donald Trump, may never see eye to eye on the events of 6th of January, when some Trump supporters called for him to be hanged, did not dwell on that disagreement during his remarks. He instead told the gathering, thank you for the privilege of serving as your vice president with Donald Trump. It was the greatest honor of my life. Pence only made a passing reference to the deadly insurrection that implied an equivalence with racial justice protests and Joe Biden's policies. Pence said, we've all been through a lot over the past year, a global pandemic, civil unrest, a divisive election, a tragic day in our nation's capital, and a new administration intent on transforming our country. Since leaving office, Mike Pence has bought a house in Indiana, announced plans for a podcast, and signed a two-book deal for his memoir. Despite the anger of some Trump supporters, he's seen as a potential candidate for the Republican nomination for president in 2024. His conference speech on Friday duly listed the Trump administration's achievements, from Supreme Court appointments to coronavirus vaccines, and took aim at Joe Biden for rapidly unraveling its legacy with a tidal wave of left-wing policies. Pence quipped, Democrats have been so busy advancing their liberal agenda, sometimes I feel like the left hand doesn't know what the far left hand is doing. He went on to rail against an explosion of runaway spending, proposed tax increases, plans to cut military spending, and the cancellation of construction on Trump's signature border wall with Mexico. Literally in 5 months, they turned the most secure border in the world into the worst border crisis in American history, Pence said to applause. You know, when I was vice president, I visited our southern border, and yes, it's past time for our current vice president to go to the border, put our policies back into effect, and end the Biden border crisis today. He also threw out false assertions to go after culture war targets currently in vogue in conservative media, including cancel culture and defund the police. Among them was critical race theory, which, developed by academics starting in the 1970s, examines how racism embedded in law and institutions creates an uneven playing field for people of color in America. Numerous Republican-controlled states have moved to ban it from being taught in schools. Mike Pence crudely misrepresented the intellectual tool by stating, instead of teaching all our children to be proud of their country, critical race theory teaches children as young as kindergarten to be ashamed of their skin color. Critical race theory is racism, pure and simple, and it should be rejected by every American of every race. The truth is, it's past time for America to discard the left-wing reflex to see systemic racism across our nation. As my friend Senator Tim Scott says so well, America is not a racist country. America is the most just, noble, and inclusive nation ever to exist on the face of the earth. Mike Pence also made several other wildly contentious claims. Pence closed a morning session that included Republican Senators Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and Rick Scott, all potential rivals for the 2024 Republican nomination. Donald Trump himself has not yet declared whether he will run or whether Mike Pence would again be his running mate. Mike Pence used his prominence as a conservative radio show host in the 1990s as a springboard to a political career in 2000. He served 6 terms in the House of Representatives and was an early advocate of the Tea Party movement. Mike Pence was elected governor of Indiana in 2012.
The World with Reporters.
Just a quick one. When are you going to...
He might have emerged the loser in a bitter internal power struggle inside Downing Street. But Dominic Cummings is reminding his former allies inside the Conservative Party that a wounded animal is at its most dangerous. Prime Minister Johnson is standing by his health secretary, even after Cummings leaked messages where Johnson branded the man in charge of handling Britain's COVID crisis as expletive hopeless and suggested handing over some of his responsibilities.
Dominic Cummings is doing this because he's his own axe to grind following his sacking as Johnson's political aide. It's clear I don't think we could trust him as far as you could throw him, but at the same time he's shedding light on what seems to be a chaotic and inefficient government whose handling of the beginnings of this pandemic was truly disastrous in terms of the number of people dying, the highest in Europe.
In an escalation of tensions between Cummings and Hancock, MPs were told back in May that the health secretary had lied to the prime minister about testing hospital patients before they were released into care homes at the start of the pandemic. In a 7,000-word blog, Cummings described Johnson and co. of rewriting history and said if number 10 is prepared to lie so deeply and widely about such vital issues of life and death last year, it cannot now be trusted either on COVID or any other crucial issue of war and peace.
Hell hath no fury like a special advisor scorned, and Dominic Cummings is making life inside the Conservative Party for his former colleagues an absolute nightmare. After all, he's the man with an agenda and the inside information to follow through.
Cummings's refusal to slink off into the political wilderness must be a source of great concern for the government, who must be dreading what he will reveal next.
I don't think he's particularly bothered about the damage he might inflict on the Conservative Party, or indeed his former boss Boris Johnson. Clearly his anger over his sacking has overcome any reservations he's got.
This might be unfolding like a poorly written telenovela. But the public will do well to be reminded that these individuals at the center of this political drama, they were the ones in charge, making decisions that may well have cost thousands of people their lives. Amina Taylor, London.
For ages, joining the North Atlantic Treaty Organization has been a long-sought dream for Ukraine. NATO countries have a mutual defense pact, meaning if one nation is attacked, the others will join in their response. By this, Kiev, which has been engaged in a domestic conflict with pro-Russian forces, is seeking to get NATO's help to get rid of the militias. On Monday, the alliance's annual summit in Brussels wrapped up with the release of a joint communique that reaffirmed NATO's 2008 decision for Ukraine to to become a member through a Membership Action Plan, or MAP, without setting a timetable. Shortly afterward, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky appeared to announce a change on Twitter shortly before U.S. President Joe Biden began a news conference in Brussels where he was attending a NATO summit. He tweeted that NATO leaders confirmed that Ukraine will become a member of the alliance. But NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg made it clear that no such action was imminent. Stoltenberg said, to agree on the membership action plan, you need a consensus among 30 allies. This was the focus of the summit. Biden stressed that Kiev does not have the go-ahead to join NATO. The U.S. president said Ukraine needs to clean up corruption and to meet other criteria before it gets into the action plan. However, he affirmed Washington's support for Ukraine's territorial integrity. Biden also met with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin for the first time in Geneva, Switzerland on Wednesday. The two discussed a number of issues, including resumption of diplomatic ties and the return of expelled envoys, but apparently made no mention of Ukraine's membership in NATO. On Thursday, the Kremlin expressed concern over talks for Ukraine to join the alliance. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said Ukraine's NATO membership would be a red line for Moscow, noting that Russia is watching the issue closely. Ukraine has been locked in a tense tug-of-war with pro-Russian forces ever since the Crimean Peninsula rejoined Russia following the ouster of Ukraine's president Viktor Yanukovych in 2014. The conflict on the country's east has killed more than 4,000 people.
The General Confederation of Lebanese Workers, the country's labor force umbrella, called for a nationwide strike across the country. Several streets in major cities and a number of key highways were blocked. Banks, several large companies, and many shops also remained closed. Head of the General Labor Union stressed in the gathering that all institutions of Lebanon are threatened, as are the citizens of the country.
We need to face this collapse of institutions through social solidarity and cooperation to preserve what is left of Lebanon and the workers of the country. This cannot happen without a salvation government which confirms political stability, paving the way for economic solutions.
The crisis has deeply stressed the budget for subsidies on essential goods. Power cuts have increased in many areas, which are seeing only 2 hours of electricity per day. People are lining up at gas stations for up to 2 hours to get limited liters of petrol in their cars, while supermarkets and pharmacies are running short of supplies.
The General Labor Union in Lebanon has declared that all members, including economic bodies, Organization of Merchants, and even the Association of Banks in Lebanon, back the strike and allow their employees and workers to take part in gatherings and protests. And while this strike is to protest the main dire economic situation in the country, it is also to put pressure on the political factions to form a much-needed cabinet.
Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri has declared an initiative to help mediate stalled talks to form a government. The disagreement is mostly prominent between Prime Minister-designate Saad Hariri and President Michel Aoun, who don't see eye to eye on the general framework of a cabinet lineup. Members of the parliament close to the speaker believe this initiative is the last resort.
This initiative is the last opportunity for the Lebanese to see some agreement on a cabinet. All political factions inside Lebanon backed this proposal, and it was also endorsed by regional and international sides, since it provides a plan for a comprehensive solution. Speaker Berri has put forth a practical framework and tactical steps to try to loosen the knot on debated issues, but this requires mutual trust and reaching a common denominator where the collapse will continue and we will all regret it then.
The World Bank has labeled Lebanon's economic crisis as one of the world's worst since the 1850s. Lack of accountability has also been one of the major reasons behind an extended, multifaceted crisis in Lebanon. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Jerusalem is closer than ever is the slogan of a symposium held in Yemeni capital Sana'a to discuss the Israel's long-lasting atrocities against the Palestinian nation. The organizers say the recent 11-day war has proved that the third generation of Palestinians is more capable of standing against Israel. They say the resistance has got stronger despite the normalization efforts of some Arab states.
The Axis of Resistance was able to prove its existence despite all the conspiracies of the closest people. There are Arab countries that are considered close to the Palestinian resistance, but unfortunately, they continue to stab the resistance through normalization with the Zionist entity. And these countries are the ones who seek to weaken and bring down the resistance. Today, the third generation of the Palestinians is capable more than ever of defending Palestine against Israel's aggression.
The gathering also hailed the support of allies for Palestinian cause, including Iran, who they say has always backed the Palestinian nation overtly. The participants said Iran has played a key role in changing the balance of the war between Palestine and the Israeli regime.
Since the establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran 40 years ago, it has made Palestine its main issue, as Imam Khomeini declared that Iran's independence will not be complete without the liberation of Palestine. The Palestinian cause is at the heart of Iran's political strategy, and despite the conspiracies that Iran has gone through, it still supports the Palestinian resistance and has been a key factor in changing the equation of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
The Palestinian cause is also an issue of consideration for several other Islamic states, including Yemen. Last month, Yemen has launched a fundraising campaign to support the Palestinian resistance groups, even though they are going through a tragic humanitarian situation due to the ongoing Saudi war on their country.
People here believe that armed struggle is the only way to stand against aggressors. They say the recent victory proved that the Palestinian nation is on the right path to regain its rights. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana.
Push back, constrain, and engage. These are the core elements contained in a European Commission policy proposal which has just been presented relating to Russia. The 27-country bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, says the EU must be realistic.
And prepare for a further downturn of our relations with Russia, which are right now at the lowest level. And this further downturn is the most likely outlook for the time being.
The new policy proposal suggests the EU must push back against Russia's human rights violations and international law breaches. This mostly relates to Ukraine and Georgia. The EU must constrain attempts by Moscow to undermine EU interests. Here the document talks about cyber attacks. But the bloc should engage with Russia on COVID-19, climate change, travel visas, and efforts to save the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal. Big claims require big evidence, and the EU has never come forward with a shred of evidence, the Kremlin insists. There are many experts who believe the EU is going down the wrong path.
The West has an interest, an institutional self-interest, in aggravating the crisis with Russia, a crisis which need never have started in the first place, but which was aggravated by the way the West supported the most radical elements in Ukraine.
Borrell was asked about the EU's dependency on Russia's energy. He responded, there is no mention of this subject at all in the policy document. The Commission proposal contains a provision for additional sanctions on Russia, but EU leaders are divided over the effectiveness of such measures. They will make their final decisions on the matter during a summit here at the European Council next week. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
After two perilous days and a difficult night, 69-year-old activist Nicholas Georges has returned to ground level after mounting a huge crane overlooking the US Embassy in London. Armed with little more than a Palestinian flag, Georges risked his life in the daredevil stunt to raise awareness of Israeli crimes against the Palestinians.
Every day, day in, day out, demolishing more and more Palestinian homes. The Palestinians have no rights. Even their electricity and their water is taken from them. Israel is the fourth largest military power, nuclear military power in the world. The Palestinians have nothing.
Apart from the obvious risk of falling to his death, the two-day ordeal has been very challenging in other ways too, as explained by fellow activists supporting him from the ground.
Apart from the climb itself, which was huge, he has suffered from the cold at night, because he couldn't fit a sleeping bag onto